Good morning, church. By now you know that I have been spending this last week on our southern border in Arizona with other faith leaders to learn about the immigration crisis. I've been there all week with the Heartland Conference. I can't share much right now because I'm pre-recording this, but I look forward to sharing what I learned. Special thanks for Ben and Bren for leading liturgy and for giving us the word this morning. Have compassion for everyone, even if they don't want it. What seems like bad manners, cynicism, or conceit is always a sign of things no eyes have seen or ears have heard. You don't know what wars are going down where the spirit meets the bone. But ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. When I turned 13 years old, I was on a trip in Tijuana, Mexico with my home church. For a week, we volunteered with a group called Esperanza, translated hope in Spanish, to build affordable housing for families living in Tijuana. Esperanza worked with communities, bringing neighbors together alongside volunteers from the United States to construct a safe home for families to live. We dug foundations, we set rebar, we poured cement, we constructed walls with others in the community, working together as partners. Covered in sweat and cement, we got closer to one another. A bond as close as friendships and as family. And that was evident when someone slipped to the family that we were helping that I was going to turn 13. On my birthday, we worked like any other day. We sat down to rest after a long morning of working in the sun, waiting on the family to bring lunch, when to my surprise, out came this huge birthday cake. The family was smiling as they set it on the table in front of me. Immediately, our site coordinator, Eduardo, began chanting something in Spanish, and the entire room, everyone started to join in with him. Seeing my confusion, he translated, take a bite, it's your birthday, it's tradition. So what do you do when you are someone's guest? You listen, you do what they're telling you to do. And so I didn't know, perhaps this was some cultural expectation on birthdays. So I'm over to take a bite. At the same time, Tony, this brawn and buff construction worker, came up behind me, placed his hand on my head, and smashed my head deep into the cake. Frosting was in my eyes, my hair, my nose. Tony rocked me. And I mean, I was left dazed and confused. The only thing that I could do was to laugh and offer a thumbs up. And if you don't believe me, see for yourself. I felt the love and laughter in the room, a joy reserved for close friends and family. Each year I went back, which was another 10 years, Tony and Eduardo reminded me of my 13th birthday and how they got me good. My annual trips to Mexico formed me and my faith. My experience of the people taught me at a young age that regardless of color, language, culture, or nationality, being human is universal. What we need fundamentally is the same. We need housing and food, clean drinking water, and more importantly, we need to feel safe. Each year, Eduardo would take us to the border wall between Mexico and the United States, which stretched out into the ocean. He told us that people go to the United States for what they desperately need: a good paying job, or to be reunited with family, with children, or parents. At that time, his own son was living in California, and he was open about how much he missed seeing him grow up. Many act as if immigration from Mexico to the United States is a new thing, but it has been going on for decades. Between 1942 and 1964, more than 4 million documented Mexican immigrants worked on U.S. farms. Many would cross the border, travel as north as they possibly could, and then they would follow the harvest seasons southward, eventually returning to their own lands, to their own farms and families in Mexico. However, for many reasons, documented immigration came to an end. Nonetheless, U.S. farmers needed their crops harvested, and workers from Mexico continued to enter the country during the harvest season to pick American crops, only now without proper documentation. Between 1965 and 1985, millions of undocumented workers crossed the borders for work and then returned home after the harvest. It benefited both countries and American consumers. It's not a recent phenomenon, but a reality for two countries who rely on one another for labor and goods. However, it has increased steadily over the years and predictable for a long time, and has grown into the immigration crisis we hear so much about today, where people do not return to their home country. There is indeed a crisis on our southern border. Every 4 days, 5 brown bodies die in the desert that we know of. Deaths along our southern borders are common. A lot of men, women, and children are found every day. Many politicians use fear-mongering to paint them as criminals, using offensive phrasing like illegals, to which the book of Genesis reminds us that no person is illegal, that they are children of God. Fear-mongering politicians offer simple and unrealistic solutions like building a wall or ship them back, often blaming the immigrants, the stranger, the naked, the hungry, the thirsty, for their predicament. However, this crisis is not due just to Mexico and other Central American countries, but us, the United States. For 150 years, we have abused our neighbors in the South. Through conquest, Mexican-American War, we took land. Through gun buffalo, we threatened smaller countries to do our bidding or face violent consequences. Through economic war, such as NAFTA, by offering U.S. farmers hefty subsidies on crops, especially corn, where it was cheaper for Mexicans to purchase American corn than to plant, grow, harvest, and sell corn themselves. And so by devaluing their cash crop, Mexican farming communities were devastated. And so due to NAFTA and corn subsidies, 1.7 million Mexican farmers closed their farms. 1 year before NAFTA was ratified, the General Accounting Office reported, and I quote, "The flow of illegal aliens across the southwest border is expected to be in a decade because Mexico's economy is unlikely to absorb all of the new job seekers that are expected to enter the labor force." immigration was going to increase, and politicians knew that. In 1994, in response to this increase in immigration due to U.S. policy, the U.S. enacted Operation Gatekeeper, you may have heard about, based upon a policy, and I quote, "to make it so difficult and costly for aliens to attempt illegal entry that fewer individuals would try." Death for brown bodies was not an unforeseen consequence of Operation Gatekeeper, but acceptable collateral damage. According to the ACLU, in 2009, 5,600 migrants have died as a direct result of our deadly deterrence policies. Every 4 days, 5 brown bodies die in the desert. 7 to 11% of those who perish are children. And the truth is, it has been designed this way. And despite those odds, migrants still make the journey. They risk their lives for better opportunities. Operation Gatekeeper has been a total failure. Tens of thousands still come and face death if it means safety and security for their family. And so we might ask, why would they do that? A question not many ask. What sort of parent would leave their family behind, face dehydration, starvation, hypothermia, coyotes, and an unwelcoming country? What sort of parent would take their kids with them on such a journey? Let us turn now to our sacred text, to a woman and a man with a child who had to make a similar decision. The new policy was that all baby boys were to be killed because of Herod's paranoia about losing his power. Their community wasn't safe. Their home wasn't safe. What was Mary supposed to do? Was she supposed to wait and see what would happen? Was she going to turn her child in and follow orders? No! No, she was going to pick up her family and walk and hope and trust that this arduous journey would lead them to what they needed. Humanity is universal. We all need housing, food, clean drinking water, and more importantly, to feel safe. Mary and Joseph were immigrants. Jesus was an undocumented immigrant child. God reveals God's self as a refugee in need. As Christians, then, to take care of and welcome the immigrant is to love God's very self. Jesus will teach, as you love the least of these, the hungry, the thirsty, the stranger, the least of these, you are actually loving me. As Christians, we have a moral and biblical mandate to take care of the immigrant. It is a recurring theme, most notably in Leviticus, when holy living is: whenever immigrants live in your land with you, you must not cheat them. Any immigrant who lives with you must be treated as if they were one of your citizens. You must love them as yourself, because you were immigrants in the land of Egypt. On the Statue of Liberty, it says, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe, to break free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." each of us, each of you, are descendants of immigrants to this land. These words greeted many of our ancestors, and before they were written, they were implied, including to German immigrants fleeing the aftermath of the 30 Years' War, who traveled to Pennsylvania, then came further west to Lancaster, planting this very church in the early 1800s. So, what can we do, Christians? What is our call? First, we are called to humanize the people who are refuge in this land. We can humanize them in our hearts, and we can remind others to remember these are human beings in need of what we all need as people. There are those that paint them as criminals, gang members, rapists, animals that are eating cats and the dogs. By humanizing them in our hearts and reminding others to do the same, we act in faith that all people are made in the image of God. Any policy that advocates separating a mother from her child, instilling terror and fear by way of raids, does not come from a heart that knows and follows the Christ we read of in sacred text. Second, we must be diligent in discovering the truth for ourselves. Despite commercials and fear-mongering politicians, the National Institute of Justice found that on average, undocumented immigrants commit far less crime, especially violent crime. There is zero evidence to support that Mexico empties jails into the United States. To say so is a flat-out lie, and the truth, we are told, will set us free. Free from lies and free from fear. Third, we need to advocate. We can write letters to legislators who are forced to reflect on statements of their constituents. We can be resilient if they support policies that harm the least of these and do not consider their humanity, then they can expect that someone is watching and someone is speaking up. Fourth and last, and that is to not look away. To not look away. It's one reason I decided to take this opportunity to go see the crisis firsthand with other faith leaders from around the country. It is why this past week I spent time talking, even walking some of the trails immigrants will walk to get to safety and security. As a citizen with privilege, I can afford to look away, and my life will not change all that much. I can turn off the news and my life and my family's life will continue as is. However, we must realize that we have neighbors in our community, people we pass in the grocery store, friends of those in our church, children in our schools, whom mass deportation, as it has been discussed publicly, would be detrimental. We can't look away. Our church, built by immigrants, filled with descendants of immigrants who worship and follow Jesus, God on earth, the undocumented child, we can't look away. To look away would be to turn from the very presence of God with us. In whatever comes next week or the week after, care for the immigrant. Humanize those in need. Discover the truth and speak truth to power. Be an advocate. And more importantly, do not and experience God's presence and God's love in all you meet. Amen.